Our guest today is Dr. Jeff Boatwright. He is a graduate of Brown University, where he earned a SCB in neurosciences and experimental psychology, and Emory University, where he earned his PhD in pharmacology and the neurosciences training program. Welcome, Dr. Boatwright. Tell us a little bit about what you do at the VA.
I'm a molecular biologist. Most of my research has to do with looking at models of blindness, animal models and cell models of blindness, trying to figure out how it is that people go blind and trying to figure out new ways to prevent that.
How long have you been with the Atlanta VA?
I was invited on board in 2011. I've been at Emory University, and I still am. That's my primary appointment, is in the Department of Ophthalmology at Emory University, and I've been there since the 90s.
What kind of research are you involved with?
My group has two major interests. One is looking at a form of gene therapy for people who go blind because of genetic predisposition. And here what we're trying to do is actually change the DNA in your body. So most gene therapies that people might be familiar with by, you know, seeing programs or hearing programs on your station, for instance, those gene therapies are where we're adding in a piece of DNA or a gene. Our approach is a little bit different. We're actually trying to change the DNA that's already in your body from a mutant form that causes the cells of the retina to die to a non-mutant form, a normal or wild-type form. So that's half of what my lab does. And the other half, we are looking for new compounds, new drugs, that slow down or prevent retina cells from dying.
How do you change someone's DNA?
It depends on what your disease model is. So I have collaborators who are looking at different liver diseases where they found that it works really well. There's a syndrome among the Amish up in Pennsylvania and Maryland and such, where the children cannot process bilirubin correctly, and they end up having short and difficult lives. This gene therapy approach works really well in tissues or organs like the liver or the kidneys, where they're relatively accessible systemically and in cell types that are constantly regenerating. We're the first group to look at this approach in cell types that are what's called terminally differentiated cells that have completely finished growing or in essence splitting or reproducing, depending on how you look at it. So you've heard that once you lose brain cells, you don't grow more. That's by and large true. The retina is part of the brain. You know, once you lose cells in the retina, you don't regenerate them. Okay. And part of that reason is those cells are terminally differentiated. They are what they're ever going to be. And because of that, this particular approach, which relies on endogenous pathways that have to do with cells splitting and reproducing, this approach is a little more problematic. So in tissue like liver cells constantly regenerate, in tissues or organs like the liver, this approach works really well. You get conversion. Up to 40% of the DNA gets converted from mutant to wild type. And in the retina, it's much, much lower. Our seminal work there showed a conversion rate of about 0.2%, so much, much lower. And now what we're trying to do is get that rate up.
How do you get that rate up?
To increase our endogenous DNA repair capability. So a lot of these processes that this approach relies on are natural endogenous DNA repair pathways. And they're constantly operating at a low level in our retinas because we're always getting bombarded by sunlight, which causes mutagenesis, which causes our DNA to be damaged. And we're constantly repairing our DNA. But it's at a relatively low level for what we want. And so what we're doing is we're looking at ways to increase that repair rate. And one of the oddest and kind of neatest things that we have going on right now is we're finding that very simple aerobic exercise increases that repair rate. Because when you're exercising very locally, like for instance in the retina or different areas, you're causing a little bit of a lack of oxygenation because you're drawing resources into other parts of your body. And so even though it doesn't harm you at all, it's as though the retina cells are being told, hey, get ready for some stress. Even though we're not going to end up being stressed very much, get ready for it. And that alone increases all these DNA repair pathway capabilities. It increases their turnover, as it were. And so we're finding then that when we use our DNA or our gene therapy approach, that the repair rates are somewhat higher. And we've got other little tricks we do that are laboratory specific, where we give these preconditioning stressors to the retina. Like in mice, we can raise them in, typically mice are raised in really dim light. And if we raise them in normal room light, like the light that we have here in the room today, it's a little bit of a stressor. It doesn't really cause any problems, but it's not what the mice are used to. And that alone increases these DNA damage response pathways. And so we're seeing that that's increasing our response to our gene therapy approach.
This research isn't ready for humans, is it?
No, we have not used this on humans. Our group is really, really basic science. And one of the reasons that I was invited to join the VA group is partially because of that, because we're very basically oriented, and they're much more oriented towards humans, towards helping our veterans. Mm-hmm. There are two big reasons I joined them. Number one, they're a fantastic group of people. I mean, they're just really dynamic. They're really bright. They're very driven to help our veterans. So that's half of why I joined them. The other half is I wanted to move into an arena where I was taking some of our ideas from the lab, from cell culture work, from mouse work, from pig work, and move it into humans. And mainly, things like exercise, you can easily imagine that, you know, we can exercise. And we're not talking about a whole lot of exercise here. I mean, if I showed you a little movie of our mice being exercised, you'd start to you'd say, well, are these guys really exercising, or are they just sort of, you know, playing? Mm-hmm. So now, of course, a mouse isn't a man, and trying to say, well, how much exercise is a mouse undergoing versus what a man would have to or a woman would have to undergo, that relationship isn't entirely clear. But we're thinking that it's certainly not even jogging. It's more like a nice brisk walk every morning. Hmm. And I guess when I use the word stress, it probably doesn't mean what most people think of as stress. It's more like, okay, it's just a little bit not normal, right? We all walk around, but maybe it's not all that normal to say, I am going to walk for 30 minutes and not stop, right? So, that's a slightly outside the bounds of just normally getting through the day.
Now, you do work with some retinal patients who are using the exercise program. What kind of response are you getting from them?
I think part of the reason that our patients are so participatory is that they can see their decline, literally see, not no pun intended at all, they can see their decline sometimes daily. So it's not like you say, heart attack victims, right? A lot of times heart attack victims, they know they should be exercising after their heart attack, but they don't. Well, they don't have a daily view of what the coronary arteries look like, right? They don't wake up every morning and say, oh, there's the movie of how my coronary arteries doing right now. But, folks that I work with, they wake up every day and they can tell, am I seeing as well as I saw yesterday?
What about the drug therapy?
So a lot of times when your retina cells are dying, they're dying due to, many reasons, but it usually involves oxidative damage. And there's already actually a lot of therapeutics out there looking at antioxidants and the effect on the retina. So some of the listeners may be aware of the AREDS study, AREDS 1 and AREDS 2, and that this was a huge, huge study that was done first in the nation and then around the world, looking at the effects of dietary supplements, right? And this is where you've probably seen this in the news, where they've come out over the years now saying they were really bright, colorful vegetables and leafy greens, etc., are good for your vision. And that's because of the antioxidants in those foods. And the studies came up with specific supplement tablets that are high in some of these antioxidants and other compounds. We're looking at compounds that are not only antioxidants, but also appear to work through additional mechanisms. I don't know how technical you want me to get, but a lot of what we're looking at seems to spare the mitochondria. The mitochondria are the powerhouses of the cells. All of our cells have mitochondria. Turns out that our photoreceptor cells in our retinas have more mitochondria packed into them than any other cell type. In fact, the retina cells are the most metabolically active cells in the body. And so you're just burning through energy with these cells. And so you can imagine that anything that compromises the powerhouses in these cells is going to lead to serious problems, because you're already using energy at the, basically the maximal rate. And you've got as many little turbines going in those cells as can be packed in. So if they're compromised at all, bad things are going to start happening. So a lot of the compounds that we look at, we're looking at them as antioxidants, but also as specifically as having an effect on these little powerhouses in the cells, on the mitochondria.
What does all this mean to veterans?
Especially for aging veterans, it means the possibility of, for instance, with the drugs, taking a relatively inexpensive compound that has, so far, we've seen no side effects, and these have gone into, a couple of the compounds have gone into the safety clinical trials, where we've given people, 50 times the dose that we expect they'll need in the retina, and we've seen, just basically no side effects. And a couple of these compounds actually are already FDA approved for other diseases, but at lower concentrations. And so we're testing them at higher concentrations, and we're not seeing any side effects. Potentially there's some GI distress as originally described for these compounds, but then they went back and looked at the data and realized that it's about the same percentage of anybody else having a tummy ache that day. So it's very low side. So it turns out that they're self-limiting, that if you take enough of them, you're basically just gonna, your body will stop absorbing at a certain level and you just poop it out.
How soon will veterans be able to take part in this research?
I literally was working yesterday at the VA talking to some folks that are already working with veterans on exercise programs, for instance. We're trying to figure out good biomarkers. We know factors that go up in, say, mouse blood during the exercise. One of them is called a brain-derived neurotrophic factor, or BDNF. And we know, for instance, that goes up in the mice that are exercised, and we know that the exercise protects the mouse's vision. And BDNF is measurable in human blood. And so, we're starting that process now of looking at BDNF levels in these humans that are in other exercise programs. And, so you can imagine this is going to be kind of a slow process, right? Because we're going to have to figure out, all right, what are the good biomarkers? And once we get a handle on how we can easily measure them in blood and maybe even in cerebrospinal fluid, then we will start a specific study where we're taking a group of veterans, say, that are already undergoing maybe macular degeneration. Let's choose that. And we'll have a group that exercises, and we'll see if we think it's altering the rate of the decline of their vision. And of course, we'll be measuring BDNF in their blood and seeing, okay, this exercise regimen is increasing the BDNF in their blood. It's probably increasing the BDNF levels in the retina as it does in our other experimental animals. And we expect to see changes. We expect to see that it will actually slow down the loss of vision. But who knows? That's the ultimate goal.
What about veterans who have been blinded in combat?
One of my projects is funded by the DOD, which is, of course, quite separate from the VA. But there we're looking at the effects of traumatic blast on vision, mainly in the retina. So there's a lot of traumatic blast injury research that's ongoing for brain damage. We're specifically looking at the retina, and we're seeing things that are in some ways similar to the brain damage and in many other ways quite different.
How is that research progressing?
Most of the early work with traumatic blast and the eye had to do with gross damage. So there's where the eye is actually damaged. You can, you walk up and you see this guy has a perforated orb or something like that. And it's only fairly recently that we've become sensitive to the idea that the shock waves from the blasts are causing problems. And when you think about the eye, right, it's an orb. It's essentially a closed system, and you're sending a huge shock wave through it. And so you're getting all kinds of compressions and contractions that we're not used to thinking about in the eye. And, or to the degree that we are, it's accompanying with something that's caused the orb to open up. And so that causes different problems. But here we've got a lot of folks that's not happened, and they look normal, and their vision when they come back from overseas is normal. And then months later, they start to have vision loss. And we're looking at what's causing that delay. And it turns out that a lot of the retina cell death is similar to what we see in disease states. And that's what kind of got us interested, because a big effort that we have now is looking at, can we slow down the vision loss using drugs that mimic BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that biomarker I talked about earlier, because it's a trophic factor, and it's kind of a healthy factor. And if you could give enough of it to the retina, you're going to slow down the retinal cell death. The problem is it has a really short half-life and it's difficult to get in the eye. And so some folks at Emory have come up with a whole family of small molecules that mimic BDNF, and they can be given systemically. And even though given systemically, they're in the blood, they actually cross into the retina, which is not trivial. Most compounds don't make that cross from the blood into the retina. So we're very excited about that research. It looks really good in mice, but mice are not men, right? Humans and mice can be quite different. And so this is something that we're hoping, obviously, to get into clinical trials.
We would like to thank Dr. Jeff Boatwright of the Atlanta VA Rehabilitation Research and Development Center of Excellence for Visual and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation for being our guest this month on ViaGARS.